As we heard in the beginning today, the church celebrates the feast or the solemnity of the most holy body and blood of Christ. Sometimes you'll hear it as Corpus Christi Sunday. It originated in the late or middle late 13th century as an Italian feast day celebrated by, there was a nun originally who really wanted this to be a feast day, and she was a mystic and a saint and really promoted and pushed it, and eventually through various circumstances, the Pope said, you know, maybe we should make this a particular feast day. And throughout the centuries then, normally places would have a Eucharistic procession, different things. We're not going to do that this year. But so it's our feast day. And I'd like to help us hone in on or focus in on what's important about this, do it by means of talking about a rule or a discipline of the church that some people don't know about, some people don't like and disagree with, some people like it, but it's hard to follow. Some people are thrilled by it. I don't know where you are. I'll get to it in a second. But talk about rules first. If you ever drive and you see, maybe you're in an area with hills and a ravine and there's a guardrail, right? And you ever wonder why there's a guardrail there? You know, who was the first person to put up the guardrail? Why did they do it? And you could imagine, maybe, who knows when whatever road this might be was first put up, that there wasn't a guardrail until something happened. You know, someone went over the edge. And so we're going to put up the rail to keep us on track. But the rule, in this example, a guardrail, is not, you know, the thrill of driving does not involve, if you have a sports car or something. Growing up, my mom had a Volkswagen, so I would borrow it and drive faster than I was supposed to have. But it was fun. Not because I would just slam into the guardrail and just scrape along the edge and, you know, just scratch the whole side of it. No, I never touched the guardrail. But it was there in case I got off course. And it would keep me on. So the joy of driving is not, although I joke, my mom likes to hug the guardrail, you know, and the side of the garage and the bank posts and all those other things. Some of you probably like to drive that way as well. But ideally, the joy of driving is not by just scraping the car along a guardrail, but by staying in the lane, and you don't even think about the guardrail. St. Augustine would say something like, love and do what you want. Because if you love, you don't need to think about the rules. The rules are there to help you when you are forgetting to love. They're kind of, okay, stay on track, stay on the road. And the rule that I would like to explain, and try to make it seem interesting and joyful, and the discipline of the church I've talked about before, is that if you find yourself aware of having committed a serious, or sometimes we'd say mortal sin, comes from the first letter of John, you shouldn't come to communion. That's the point of my whole homily. So if you already know that, you can fall asleep now, okay? That's the point. And for a lot of people, that's for a lot of reasons. It's like, I don't agree with it, I don't like it. And very few people are just thrilled by that. But I want to convince the unconvinced here and say, why should you like it and why should that be joyful? So if you are aware of having committed a serious, we say mortal sin, you haven't gone to confession, you shouldn't go to communion. But before I get to how that exactly applies or why that is, we need to step back and look at the natural world and the sacredness of the world, And as folks were walking in, I was feeling a little bit overwhelmed by how, just knowing some things are going on in folks' lives right now, how aware we are of the sacredness of life. And I felt even like a little bit emotional. But even if we get human life, just think of the natural world. You know, God created everything, and he created it good. Natural things are good, filled with something of the presence of God. Maybe this spring was a little more joyful than previous springs. You know, as you saw the flowers bloom and the weather turn warm because of the virus having been, you know, kind of locked inside for a little while. Hopefully it was. For me, it was. You think of the sacredness of just nature. You think of the sacredness of us as people, as humans. So we were all created by God. That makes us sacred. We were all redeemed by Christ. That makes us sacred. And Jesus himself became a human. So we're triply sacred. And after God had done all of this, even in the beginning, before Christ, he rested and appreciated what he had done. That's how good we are. He doesn't appreciate and rest and recognize, you know, I made an iPhone. God doesn't rest after that. But he rests after what he has done because it's so good. And we forget that, though, don't we? I do. I mean, I frankly hardly think about it. And, you know, I don't have necessarily a solution to world crises, national crises, everything that's going on, but I know whatever the immediate cause of things are, the protests and violence and racism, I know that at least a root cause is we forget that every single person is made in the image and likeness of God. And we forget so much that we build our society around having forgotten that very often, and many other consequences of that. So whatever the recent cause, at least in the beginning, we forget that everything and person is sacred. So we forget that. You know, I'm in my own daily life, little things that are just, I'm careless about life. You know, I'm filling up the ice from the ice maker in the fridge, and the ice cubes fall on the floor. And it's like, well, they'll melt, you know. And Father Nathan wears shoes, so he's not going to get socks, wet socks. And, you know, it's kind of like, I get just that caring about being, even just silly, but, you know, not caring about being considerate for another person. And that's a silly example, but, and then all of the big ways, you know. But really, we should walk around and we should say, that's a child of God. That's a child of God. That's a child of God. And then, oh, you see your enemy over there. That's a child of God. That's my brother. That's my sister. And no one does that. Maybe you do, but I hardly do it. And yet that is the nature of the world. That's okay, so that's the world we live in. We forget that, and there's a lot of consequences, big and small, of that. Okay, then now here we come to the Mass, until we have the center of the Mass, which was seemingly the center of Jesus' own ministry, which was the Last Supper, where he gave us his body and blood. And we forget that things are sacred, and so we have moments of our life where we highlight the sacredness of things. So we take natural stuff, and we dress them up to say, We get lost and confused in daily life, and we come back once a week and we say, but the world is sacred. Pay attention. And so we dress it up. We have candles and we have an altar, and there's marble and stone, and, you know, the book of the gospel is gilded and embroidered and painted, and it's expensive, and you have gold chalices and vestments and all of these things, and we dress up and we do all of this. So you forgot that the world was beautiful and sacred. Here's a reminder once a week. And then all of that is sort of summarized in the reception of the body and blood of Christ, where all that is ultimately and perfectly sacred and holy, which is God and his divinity, meets all that was sacred and has a remnant of it, but which we have destroyed, which is in humanity, and it comes together in one. We allow that to enter into our hearts. And so the Eucharist raises us up out of our brokenness, out of the ordinariness, and raises us up, and we become a part of the ultimately sacred, the holy, the divine, part of God. And so here's when this discipline comes in. So sin is not just, I broke the rule. God didn't just make up a bunch of rules, 5,000 years ago and said, okay, what should I have them do? Don't kill, that might... he didn't just come up with this stuff. It corresponds to the nature of reality. Sin is a rejection of the sacredness of reality. That's what sin is. It's either the rejection of the sacredness of a human, creation, or of God himself. And if we reject the sacredness of God and we don't repent of it, when we receive that sacredness, there's a contradiction going on. Do you see it? So if we have sort of an unrepentant, serious sin that I won't acknowledge and I won't confess, and then I say amen, that God is making it all sacred, and yet I'm telling God by my actions or words or thoughts that I hate him and his sacred creation, you can't have them together. It's a sort of a fight, you know? It's an absurdity. And it's so much so that the church would say that you leave worse off than when you came. To receive communion in a state of serious sin, you leave worse than when you came. And there's a prayer I'll pray that's normally silently the priest prays, where the priest prays that, make this communion not be judgment onto me. St. Paul would say that if we don't discern sin in our life before communion, we we condemn ourselves, and some of us will die because of it. You can read it, 1 Corinthians 11. So what does that look like practically then daily life? I'll give you an example from my own life. So as this is a rule and a discipline for me as a priest as it is for anyone else, and every once in a while I struggle with it. And an example would be when I was ordained a deacon, I made a promise for the rest of my life to pray the Liturgy of the Hours, which is the book of the Psalms basically split up into parts. And I made a promise to pray it every day. And there are times when I either forget or I choose not to. And both of those I'm liable for. It'd be like a mother forgetting to make dinner. It's like, okay, or a father, whoever cooks at home. It's like, okay, you forgot, but that's what parents do. They need to feed their family, right? So it's hard to give an excuse for that. Well, I forget sometimes. Not often, but every once in a while. Oftentimes it's just purely my fault. I have no excuse. And I need to go to confession. But sometimes I have to say Mass. So Canon Law says, if it would be a grave scandal to not go to communion, so it would be a grave scandal if I were to say, well, there's no Mass today because you all are here. So I have to do what's called make a kind of a sacrilegious communion. And so I have to confess that too. And I go to confession to my brother priest. I call him up on the phone and, you know, we sit in our gym shorts in the backyard and Father, forgive me for I have sinned. I didn't pray and I received communion unworthily, made a sacrilege of it, a mockery of holy things. And, you know, at first I feel like a slug. I feel like a loser. You know, in some sense I am. But the joy of it is the Lord doesn't reject me in that moment. He receives me, he welcomes me. And I don't hear, or at least I try not to hear, a condemnation. You're not good enough, you're not good enough, you're not good enough. But rather, you can be good enough. You can grow. You can become holy. Follow me. And that's what confession is, ultimately. And so I have to do that every once in a while. And it's unfortunate. It's not good. But I think it's also probably not unlike the rest of us here in different ways, in different times and places. One more thought, or a couple more thoughts. People might say, well, Father, that's kind of childish. You know, I'm an adult, and I get to decide for me what I do. And do you know who that sounds a lot like? There's an old guy in the Bible. His name's Adam. And God said you can eat of all the trees of the garden except for the knowledge of good and evil. In other words, you can't decide right and wrong for yourself. You receive it. Adam liked that, and he ate of the fruit. So Adam eats of the fruit, rejection of right and wrong, and evil enters in. We eat of the fruit, and goodness enters in. But we don't eat it as Adam. We eat it as Christ, having been made a member of his body because we haven't rejected his body. You know, another thing someone says, that's kind of childish. And I say, well, Jesus says, unless you become like a little child, you should not enter into the kingdom of God. But it's not me who makes you childish. It's a self-reflection. I have no clue what goes on in your life. And so there's no way I know. It's an act of integrity on yourself. Say, Lord, help me to have integrity as I enter into the Holy of Holies and be honest with myself. Okay, here's the final thing. I think one big reason why folks struggle with this is because it makes people stick out. You know, who knows? I remember in seminary, I would be mad at the priest giving me communion. And so I wouldn't go to communion. But I would be afraid sometimes, because what are people going to think? What is that? What if they think I did? I'm not telling everyone what I did, but what, you know, who knows what they're thinking? Wouldn't it be great if, as a church, we were more accepting of there being sinners in the pews? Wouldn't that be nice? Because very often we're like, I have to look perfect. Here I am in church. I have to look perfect in front of everyone. But if we were more accepting and less judgmental of people being sinful, and we had just acknowledged that pews are filled with sinners, we'd have a more full church, because a lot of people don't come to church because they feel judged and condemned. But wouldn't it be beautiful if there was just a custom where people just felt free to participate as they are spiritually prepared and not forced to violate their own inner integrity? And to receive communion when they're ready, when they're able, when they're in a good place. And not everyone is all the time. I think our pews would be, well, not today because we've reached our limit, but on another day, in another time, I think they'd be more full if we were more comfortable, less judgmental. So if you find yourself, you love this teaching, it's good, and then you receive communion and then you just stare at everyone else because you want to see if they're doing it or not, it's like, shame on you. Let people just be. Let them love God. Let them be where they're at. Don't judge. I was talking to a gentleman after Mass. He said he would have to eat candy before Mass so he could tell people he didn't go to communion because people come up and ask him. So he'd say, I didn't keep the fast. But he had some other things on his heart. And wouldn't it be beautiful, though, if we were able to just be sinful people as we are before the Lord, inspired to grow in greatness? So, by way of a summary, we have this discipline of the church to not come to communion unless we're free of unconfessed serious sin, mortal sin, and to see it not as a condemnation, to see it not as a judgment or a belittling of adults, children, whoever it might be, but rather as a call from God to live with integrity, to see in the Lord sacred things, and to see in the world sacred things raised up back to where they were from the beginning. I think if we were to do that, our church would be a much more vibrant and joyful place.